This is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. You know, we've featured a lot of weight loss programs on the show, everything from calorie counting, paleo, vegan to Mediterranean diet. Well, today we explore a diet from 6th century BC, pioneered by a man named Buddha. Joining us is authors of Buddha's Diet, The Ancient Art of Losing Weight Without Losing Your Mind, and that starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
We have with us Tara Cottrell, a health and wellness writer whose work has been featured by NPR, Missouri Review, Palo Alto Weekly, and the Indiana Review. Joining her is Dan Sigmund, an ordained Zen Buddhist priest who studied and practiced Buddhism in temples in America, Thailand, and Japan. In 2015, he was named one of Wired Magazine's 20 business geniuses you need to know. Welcome, Tara and Dan, authors of the book Buddha's Belly, The Ancient Art of Losing Weight Without Losing Your Mind. Welcome to the show, folks.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Hi.
That's great. First, let's clear this up. When the average person thinks of Buddha, they think of the overweight statue of Buddha at Chinese restaurants. It's said that rubbing Buddha's fat belly is going to bring good luck, wealth, and prosperity. However, in your book, you share how the real Buddha was actually lean and trim. Can you clear that up for us? What's the confusion here?
Sure. The guy at the Chinese restaurants is actually a different guy. He's a monk who lived in China about 1,000 years after Buddha, after Buddha died, and somehow here in the States we've kind of gotten him confused, but he's someone else entirely. The real Buddha was pretty slim.
It's interesting, and you know, not many people know that, so it's kind of interesting. I researched, and I go, wow, that's a nice little tidbit there. So now it makes sense. Now, in your book, you've created, I guess, guidelines on eating, exercise, and meditation based on Buddha. First, let's talk diet. What can we learn from Buddha about losing weight?
So basically, we focus on an eating clock, which is around less on what you eat. There's no real restrictions about you can't have gluten or you can't have wheat. You can't have, you must be paleo, those types of things. It's very much rooted in time. So something that Buddha really preached to his followers was around what he called no untimely eating. So he told his monks basically not to eat after a certain time, so not eat in the evening. And what we've kind of come to find out through data and research and kind of modern science is that it really matters a lot when you eat. And we've kind of done this around-the-clock eating that people do in the modern world. And what Buddha's diet focuses on is following kind of what Buddha said, which is that you don't do untimely eating. You don't eat around the clock. And so Buddha's diet focuses on the when. So kind of working from an eating clock, working from, say, starting from eating from about 12 hours and then working down to about 8 hours and then fasting for those remaining hours throughout the day. So Buddha's diet mostly focuses on the when of eating as opposed to the what.
So basically, it's a specific time clock allowing yourself to digest, I guess, before you eat again, correct? So you want to digest it because, you know, we as Americans, I mean, people just eat in front of the TV, they eat before bed, they eat at dinner, they eat lunch, and sometimes it's overkill. So say that again. So give us an idea. What's the clock look like for eating from this particular
diet? Sure. In terms of why this seems to work, you know, parts of our bodies, like our hearts and our brains and our lungs, we're basically made to work 24/7. They never stop. But our digestion, our metabolism, just isn't like that. If you look out in the wild, if you look at how animals eat and so forth, no one except modern humans tries to eat around the clock the way we do. So we recommend just a much more natural kind of eating rhythm where you're eating, you know, during the day in a way during the time that we are really made to eat. We recommend around 9 hours as being the optimal time. So for a lot of people, that's, you know, say from 9 a.m. till 6 p.m. or 10 to 7 or something like that. And that just gives you a much more healthy, much more natural way of eating.
Yeah, I just had a patient who was actually a couple days ago tell me that he lost weight and it was phenomenal. I remember seeing him a couple years ago, and that's what he said. He said he brought his clock closer together when he allowed himself to eat, and your body, I guess, gets used to it. Right now you don't, if you're used to going home and eating in front of the TV at night, but as you train yourself, I guess there's not that desire.
Yeah, I think that's true, and I think a lot of people find, you know, we've heard from people who, even people who didn't have weight to lose, say that they've naturally cut out that kind of mindless eating that tends to happen when you get home from work and when you, like you said, you're eating in front of the TV, or, you know, you just grab a snack maybe right before bed, or you finish up a glass of wine right before bed. That kind of eating that we do right up until we basically go to bed is, for the most part, you know, it's often emotional eating or mindless eating or trying right. to de-stress or reward yourself for maybe, I don't know, something good that happened, or, you know, something you feel you deserve. So a lot of that kind of eating is taken away when you stop that clock at, say, 6 or 7 o'clock. So it has its benefits, even aside from losing weight, because a lot of those calories tend to be, you know, junk food or things you probably wouldn't eat normally.
Right. And you mentioned before fasting. Is this something that we should embrace? How often then? And when do we, is the fasting just between meals?
So one of Buddha's big teachings was what he called the middle way, finding the path between extremes. So, you know, he didn't want people to be extreme ascetics, of kind of beating themselves up all the time, but he also didn't want people living a life of just kind of complete luxury and indulgence.
Right.
And we see this diet sort of in the same way, where instead of having, you know, long periods of fasting the way that some people do, you know, on other diets, every day is a day that you're both eating and fasting. So every day has a period where you're eating basically in a normal way, the way most of us do. And then these hours, you know, after your last meal that are really fasting times, where your body has a chance to digest and recover and get ready for the next day. So in a way, it's not a fasting diet, but it's also not a fasting diet. Every day you're doing a little bit of each.
Got it. And the word breakfast is also called breakfast, and I guess that's important also, correct? What would you recommend in the, I guess, that first meal? What would be the theory to this this diet?
You know, we're not very prescriptive, but basically what we don't worry quite so much about what foods are healthy or not healthy, so much as what's kind of helpful. So right. That first meal, you know, generally something filling and, you know, something that is going to carry you for a few hours. So as soon as you finish, you're not jumping right into a snack or something like that.
Great. That makes sense. What about exercise? I would imagine that Buddha didn't work out regularly at Gold's Gym. And how does that apply to today?
Yeah, we don't focus a tremendous amount on exercise. We basically say that any kind of exercise you can get that you can sustain and keep a habit is, you know, a positive move in the right direction. Like you said, Buddha wasn't in a gym. He wasn't doing CrossFit, anything like that. So, but he also did walk a tremendous amount, right? In order to kind of get to all of his followers and kind of spread the word about what he was teaching, he was, you know, obviously doing a lot of walking. But, you know, we really say that, you know, one of the things about exercise is, you know, it's very difficult to outrun a bad diet. So, you know, it's really important that one of the things you really look at is how much you're eating, because it doesn't really matter if you're getting... you know, if you're working out a lot at the gym, but then you're still putting, you know, garbage into the tank, you know, it's going to be really hard to kind of lose weight and maintain a healthy lifestyle. So, you know, we really focus on kind of getting that eating clock nailed down and then adding in the exercise next after that.
Right. I've always said you lose weight in the kitchen and you stay trimmed at the gym. So you're right.
Yeah.
It really it does have to do with food. I'm telling you, people, you can't yeah. outrun a donut. Now, donuts are not fattening if you eat the center. That's okay, folks. The center of the donut,
That's
no
good.
Calories.
That's a great tip.
Now, interesting, you know, as we know, Buddha practice, daily meditation, and yoga, and you talk about that in your book. But in today's hustle and bustle, stresses of deadlines, kids, work, finances, politics, and holidays, we're probably a wee bit more stressed than people were, you know, 2,500 years ago. Do the same practices of stress-relieving meditation and yoga still apply?
I think they do, and probably shouldn't underestimate how hard it was to live back then, where they had to, you know, grow or hunt their own food and all right. kinds of other things. They didn't necessarily know where their next meal was coming from. And I don't think it necessarily takes a lot. Even meditating 10, 15 minutes a day can have a big effect. It's a little bit like what Tara was just saying about exercise. I think every little bit helps. If you can just find a few minutes during your day to kind of detach and whether it's take a walk or sit quietly in a room, getting a chance to just have a few moments of calm and stillness, I think makes a world of difference.
Especially, a lot of people glued to the news with the elections, and they're just staying so tight, and they continue to watch CNN, Fox, MSNBC, and watch, and it's like, even I've been guilty of that. You know what? I just put on some soft music and immediately relax. I felt my shoulders drop. I go, you know, you got to get away from this hustle and bustle of news and negativity. So I think it's so important, and I think it's tougher today now to do that just because we're so bombarded with all these negativity.
Yeah, I think that's true. And another thing is, you know, I think it's important to kind of integrate some of these, some mindfulness into work, which is, you know, the majority of where many of us spend our time. Even if we're working at home, you know, there's lots of stresses and it's still work. And so kind of, you know, remembering to, you know, not have lunch at your desk every day right. and remembering to, you know, maybe go outside and take a walk and, you know, trying to incorporate that into your actual, to your work day is really important and has, you know, it's been shown to have a lot of benefits to, you know, productivity and a feeling of calm and de-stressing right. at work so that once you arrive home, you know, you're not as inclined to maybe do some of that, you know, emotional eating and mindless eating that we tend to do, right? Because a lot of times we're coming down off that stressful experience we just had at work.
Yeah, and also the one simple word is I tell patients, breathe. People, what do you mean I am breathing? I go, well, the average person breathes 30% lung capacity all the time. They're shallow breathers. You never take a deep breath in and hold it, and that just brings so much more oxygen and blood flow. And it's amazing what a couple deep breaths sometimes will do. It just lowers the heart rate and just makes you feel good. So, you know, that's something I guess you would adapt to meditation, correct?
Absolutely. You know, focusing on that kind of breathing and giving it a little bit of your attention so that you are really breathing is a big part of meditation. And you know, for a lot of people, just sitting still in a room and breathing and focusing on your breath for 10 minutes, you know, that can be enough to really make a huge difference in your level of stress and just kind of awareness.
True. Now, what about sleep? I know research shows the average adult gets like 6 hours of sleep per night, which has a major effect on our hormones and our weight. Did Buddha stay up late watching infomercials, or did he practice deep and restorative sleep?
I think Buddha got plenty of sleep. As in everything, he preached this kind of middle way where he didn't want people to be, you know, sleeping till noon necessarily, but he did think that sleep was very important. And he compared sleeping to the string of like an instrument, like a guitar or a violin, where if it's too loose, that's no good, and if it's too tight, that's no good. You need to make sure you're getting just that right amount. And you're absolutely right that these days, you know, the big problem is really not getting enough sleep. And you can get into this whole downward spiral where, you know, we don't get enough sleep and then we overeat sometimes to compensate for that. And then that overeating makes us sleep even worse. And we just kind of spiral down from there.
Yeah, that's great stuff. And, you know, with sleep, it's kind of like your car. You wouldn't keep that on all the time. You shut it down and you put it in the garage. And so many people just force themselves to stay awake and wake. And, you know, I'm guilty of that, too. I've had to realize, hey, I need my rest to restore. And it does combat disease. It does help with the weight loss. And it does help with the mind, body, and spirit. So I think sleeping is important. And it's over not really used a lot because people have their iPhones and their TVs, and I guess back in the days of Buddha, it was dark out. Hey, let's go to sleep. You know?
Yeah.
Let me ask you, what does today's modern science show us when looking at Buddha's beliefs and practices?
So, you know, in the course of writing this book, we had the opportunity to meet one of the great researchers in this area, Sachin Panda, who works down at the Salk Institute in San Diego. And he's done a lot of work on exactly this kind of intermittent fasting and has just found really fascinating results. He had a group of mice, and he basically allowed them to eat anything they wanted. He gave them this high-fat, high-sugar food in unlimited supply. And, of course, you know, wouldn't surprise anybody, those mice got pretty overweight.
Right.
Then he took those same kind of mice and he gave them that same kind of food, again, allowing them to eat as much as they wanted. But then he cut them off after 9 hours. There was nothing but water left in their cages after that. And, you know, those mice ate about the same amount, but they didn't gain any weight. And he's repeated this and done lots of variations on this and always finds the same thing, that this kind of intermittent fasting seems to somehow protect us against that, the bad effects of overeating. And then, you know, if we're overweight to start with, can help us lose weight and get back to kind of our natural shape.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, I just talked to a patient of mine, and he's walking proof. The guy looks great. And I said, did you go paleo? Did you go vegan? What did you cut calories? He said, none of the above. He says, I brought that window of when I ate closer together, and I fasted. And it's just what you're saying. And he basically ate the same thing, but he allowed himself, I guess during that time, it burns the fat, it burns the calories. You're not throwing more gasoline on the flames, and it allows you to actually burn the fat instead of food.
Yeah,
and I think it brings us more into kind of this rhythm that we're supposed to be in, you know, this kind of circadian clock that's getting more and more attention and the rhythm of having a pause, you know, so that we can rest and so that we can be more mindful and so that we can give our bodies, like, you know, a proper break.
That'd be a good name for a book, Pause. it's something
maybe
we really... Yeah, I mean, we rarely press that. It's so, you know, this, the other, and it's great. Even when you said the word, I just kind of relaxed, and I almost hope I got to keep talking. just me saying the word pause relaxed me. Well, hey, what else can we learn, I guess, from Buddha's teachings that we can grow from? Anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I think, you know, as we've been talking about, the importance of finding that middle way of finding the balance in your life, whether that's, as we were just talking about, between sleeping and waking, whether it's between eating and fasting, whether it's in exercise or work, you know, just always trying to look for that balance and not pushing us so hard towards these extremes. I think we have a tendency these days to want to take everything to the next level, to push ourselves a little further. And, you know, that's not always the right answer.
Right. So really add to the word pause, the word balance, and I think you've got the perfect living recipe, two words. It's about balance and pause. Pause the eating, don't eat, take that fasting to the pause, and then balance is about proper sleeping, walking, breathing. So with those two words, we need to pause when we're getting crazy and balance when we're awake. Sounds like a good plan to me.
Sounds good.
Great. Well, thanks so much for being here. It's a great, interesting topic. Like I said, it's one we've not covered. So appreciate you guys being here. And to get Dan and Tara's latest book, Buddha's Diet, The Ancient Art of Losing Weight Without Losing Your Mind, you can go to buddhasdiet.com. And you can follow them on Twitter at Buddha's Diet. For my daily health tweets, follow me on Twitter at Dr. David Friedman. You can stay up to date on all of our latest health and wellness segments at toyourgoodhealthradio.com, iHeartRadio, or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Share these segments on social media. People need to know this stuff. You know, this is all great. Don't be selfish. Press share. Let everybody know what's going on here at To Your Good Health Radio. As always, thanks for listening, everybody, and stay tuned and stay well.